This is the September 29 edition of Commodity Week.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're joined by U of I agricultural economist Scott Irwin now to talk about crop production numbers and what they really mean. He and Daryl Good and one other have gone back and taken a look at crop production figures. There's a saying, an adage in the marketplace that a big crop gets bigger, and we have both a big corn crop and a big soybean crop. What'd you find?
Well, maybe first some context. I find I've always been fascinated by that market adage. So what is it? Big crops get bigger and small crops get smaller. That's the idea that across the USDA's forecasting cycle for yield and production for corn and soybeans, which goes from August through January after harvest, that there's a tendency for the USDA to be conservative about yield prospects early in years of really good production, and a tendency to be optimistic early in years when production prospects are poor. It's kind of an argument is that the USDA likes to spread the pain out over time.
Yeah, so that a big crop would get bigger, a small crop would get smaller over time.
Right. And as far as I can tell, Todd, this is one of the most widely believed market adages I can imagine. I put it in the same category as hot hands in basketball. Everybody believes that and can't believe it couldn't be true. But the statistics consistently say it ain't so.
So you did the stats.
And right.
It says not true.
It's not true. And so how did we show it? And what we tried to do, we've taken a whack at this issue several times over the years, Daryl Good and myself and others that we've worked with. And our statistical results has apparently convinced no one. And so we took another whack at it, trying to explain why we think the belief is so deeply embedded out there in the marketplace and what misleads people. So that was the purpose of this article that came out yesterday.
So you had to figure out what you think misleads people first, or did you come about that at the
we did that
statistical
first.
Side? And what did you come up with?
Well, here's what you can show. And this is the kind of evidence that Daryl and I have seen over the years, over and over, used to justify this belief. People will do something like they'll plot the difference from a trend yield estimate of the USDA's January estimate. So that's how much you're above or below trend based on the USDA's final estimate. And then the change in the USD estimate from August to January or September to January, which is what we looked at. And that's a very common sense way of looking at the data. And that routinely shows a pretty strong positive correlation. In other words, if we were well above trend for corn yields, okay, that the USDA tended to raise their yield estimate from early in the season to the final.
A big crop gets bigger.
Exactly. And you can show the same thing on a small crop gets smaller. It's just the other end of the relationship.
But wait, you say it's a myth.
Yeah. And so it looks so obvious when you look at the data. But this is the place where statistics and rigor really do matter, because there's a tricky part of what seems so obvious that I just explained to you. We used the January estimate to define our yield trend deviation, whether it's a big crop or a small crop. But standing in August or September each year, you don't know what that January estimate's going to be. So when you, instead of looking at the size of the crop after the fact based on January, what we show is if you look at whether it's a big or a small crop based on what you know in September, that relationship disappears completely.
Wait, does that mean you're throwing out years when you're looking backwards from January back? You throw out years that might have changed what would have been the outcome? So
the trick is, standing in August or September, there are a lot of years where you might think you have a big crop, but it doesn't turn out in January you really did. Or there might be some years where you didn't think you had a big crop and you really ended up having a big crop. And that adds enough noise to the equation that you really can't predict USDA changes in USDA yield forecasts from either August or September through January based on what you know in real time about the size of the crop in August or September.
So by choosing the years in January that appear to be above trend or that are above trend, you by default made the myth true.
Exactly. It's really, you know, what mathematicians call tautology. It almost has to be true because after the fact, you're measuring the size of the crop based on the final estimate, not what was truly available when you had to make a decision in marketing. You know, common sense tells us that the corn and soybean crops are big this year. I mean, we're not going to dispute that. But what the statistics say, that doesn't tell you anything about how the USDA is going to change their estimate in October or November or January.
Okay, so now if you go back historically and take a look at any poll in August and or September or both, and the numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture for corn and soybeans, and you look for trends that are above or below trend line, or yields above or below trend line substantially, and you'll have to tell me what that trend line deviation might be, what does it tell us?
Well, again, we looked at, for example, if you line up, we did it from 1970 through 2015, and we looked for the 10 largest observations in September above trend. On average, these were years when, based on the September USDA estimate, on average, that was 8 bushels above our trend estimate.
No, but it was just the top 10 out of that year, the top 10.
Out
of those 46 years, so the top 10 of the 46.
So you go standing in September, based on the USDA September estimate, you would think, wow, those were all in September big crops.
And did you compare them to other months besides January or just to January?
Then what we did was we said, okay, in those 10 years with those really huge yield deviations, what was the change in the USDA's corn production or soybean production estimate from September through January in those same 10 years? And so if big crops get bigger, the change from September to January should be a pretty substantial positive number. It might not be, you know, if you were 8 bushels above trend, maybe you'd go up 2, 3, 4 bushels, whatever.
And?
Statistically, no different than zero.
Myth busted.
Myth busted. And it's the same thing on soybeans.
So meaning half of them were above and half of them were below.
Yeah.
Or thereabouts.
Yeah.
And for soybeans, same thing or
same
nearly?
Same thing.
Did it surprise you?
You know, intriguingly, we've been around this block enough times, Daryl and I, that originally it did. When we first started doing this research playing around with these ideas maybe 12, 15 years ago, we made the same mistake everybody else did until we figured it out.
So you figured you had to look backwards instead of forwards.
Well, you should look forwards instead of backwards. And when it was a pretty common sense observation, and it's rare where it makes this much difference. Now, having said all that, does that mean that there's no information in what happens between these early yield and production forecast revisions that the USDA does? Intriguingly, what we find, which is completely consistent with ours and others' research for the last decade, there is a tendency, particularly in corn, for the USDA to smooth their corn production and yield estimates. So in other words, it's like they have a target in mind for yield for the final, and they kind of sneak up to it or sneak down to it. So in other words, we know that the USDA raised their soybean estimate substantially from August to September. History says there's a tendency that they're going to continue raising that. But that tendency doesn't depend on whether you're in a big crop or a small crop year. It's consistent across all years.
So I'm trying to wrap my head around the idea that USDA has a target in mind or smooths it, because that doesn't make sense to me unless it's the farmer side of their survey that does the smoothing. I can't see USDA smoothing.
They do. They clearly do. And we've documented this in formal research papers for over a decade. It's much more prominent in corn than it is in soybeans. And the reason they can smooth, Todd, gets back to something I wrote about last month, which is the big range between the yield indicators that they get for each report. There's an objective yield indicator, and there's the farm operator survey, and there's a big differences between those. So they
can pick a point in between wherever they want.
With enough, they have wiggle room to do this.
So I'm trying to figure out if you ask them how they do it.
Oh well. That's an interesting question.
Do they know how they do it?
They do. Actually, in this, when Daryl and I and another researcher named Olga Eisen-Galdina, she's now at Virginia Tech, first looked at this in an article we published in 2006, we actually did that. We went to Washington, D.C., presented our results to the key NAS statisticians and administrators, and asked them for their, how they interpret this statistical tendency. And there was a lot of head scratching and puzzling, and we ended up with some interesting discussions. There are actually some good statistical reasons for possibly why they do it. As a forecaster myself, I think the biggest reason is that all forecasters receive a lot of negative feedback if their forecasts of the same event jump around too much in the eyes of the people that are using those forecasts. We as humans like to see really smooth adjustment paths over time. That we think is what makes most sense, and is, I think, what is hardwired into our DNA. But statistics says that's not the way the world should work. You should always adjust to maximally every time to whatever the information says. But I think that makes adjustment paths and forecasts too jumpy for people. And I think that's really what the USDA NAS people have learned. It's in their DNA. And so they reflect that kind of caution and conservatism in adjusting over time.
So let me clarify some, because right now there are some going, aha, they smooth it, they do adjust it. And then they'll also jump to a second conclusion, which is they adjust it for a political reason or under some kind of order from someplace else. But what you're suggesting is not that case, is that they get the data has a high and a low.
Right.
And that they pick a point in between. And if I were going to think about it, I would say I have a whole bunch of numbers. I look for the median, not the average, because that kind of gives me the lean. And then I pick, and then they may actually have an adjustment there where they're still inside the range, but they pick to one side or the other of maybe the median, which already has a lean in it.
That's right. They're, think of it this way. They're just simply going to, regardless of the years or the price effect, they're going to lean conservative in their numbers. If it's, they're, when they do their first forecast, that they don't have anything to compare to, so that's whatever it is. But it's really, we're talking about, well, what do you do with the second forecast in September? So if, you know, for example, in soybeans, how much did that go up from August to September this year?
It was a pretty good jump.
It was a big jump. I think it was like almost 3 bushels.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly, but my guess is, Todd, their data probably indicated a bit bigger adjustment if you just took the data as a given that they collected for the September report.
Oh, so your suggestion is in October we'll see potentially that number grow again.
Yes. You know, that would be the history based on the fact that the first number went up from August to September. That's this general tendency that if you know that the first number went up, there's a slight tendency in soybeans and an even greater tendency in corn for the numbers to continue going up.
Yeah, so in soybeans, it was
not
actually
good for soybeans.
Yeah, it was actually 1.7 bushels.
Was that what it was? Okay,
yeah,
sorry.
So 3 bushels, maybe your pick for us.
Yeah, maybe that was a Freudian slip there, Todd.
And it actually went down 0.7 of a bushel for corn.
Right, and so intriguingly, these tendencies would, and I would have more confidence in corn, would say that history, and it's certainly not perfect, these correlations, but the history would say that you would expect further declines in corn if the first revision was down.
Did you look at it month by month as well?
We have done that, and we didn't in this FarmDoc Daily article. We have in other research articles.
And so what you've already told me is probably the case, that you can see the move month by month as well, but you have to look forward into the event, not backwards.
That's right. So if you're looking forward, there is this consistent smoothing tendency. It's stronger for corn than it is in soybeans, but it's in both of them. In corn, this was the one that's most fascinating. In corn, over these 46 years, if the USDA's first revision of corn yield in September is positive, so if it just goes up for starting low or starting high, it doesn't matter, 71% of the time, the September to January revision is up.
Now that's one you can bet on.
Yeah. But this year it went down, so that doesn't apply.
Yeah, so then there's not a corresponding move to the downside then.
No, it's really focused on their what you see in corn, there's are especially conservative about increasing corn yields if the first revision says that the size of the yield is growing.
Can we take just a second and talk about how these crop production numbers, yields, totals are actually figured?
Mm-hmm.
What do they do?
Well, again, the key is to understand that what the USDA does is they take two different surveys. Absolutely bedrock important principle in understanding these USDA numbers. One they call the Farm Operator Survey, and that is just a simple survey of farm operators, and they call or they do it on the computer or A few are mail-in surveys that are asked, what do you think the yields in your farm operation will be this year? Very straightforward kind of collection of numbers. We see those kind of surveys done all the time. The second survey that they do in parallel is what's called the objective yield survey. And this is the one that gets all the attention typically in the press. And in the objective yield survey, that's where they send what they call enumerators actually out into the field to take measurements. The size of that survey is much smaller, and it's limited to what they call 10 objective yield states in corn, 11 in soybeans, because you're paying people to go out and take measurements, and that's an expensive process. And so what NASS does in parallel, they have these two independent surveys, one from farmers and one that they are going out and taking measurements themselves, and they get two completely independent, what they call yield indications. And then what the Agricultural Statistics Board, which is the group inside the NASS agency of the USDA that's formally responsible for making these estimates, they have to say, okay, one says this, the other one says this, what's going to be our final published number? And that's kind of fundamentally how it's done.
Does that change from month to month? Do they weight it from month to month based on the availability of more objective data?
They don't, I don't believe, place more or less weight over time on the objective versus the farm operator, because in essence, both surveys reflect more information over time. So as the, say, corn crop gets more mature in September and October, they can measure things with more precision. But farmers are also harvesting, and they're getting more precise information about what yields are going to be, either themselves, through neighbors, or wherever, whatever's influencing their yield expectations. And so NASS will continue to basically approximately put about equal weight on both of those surveys.
And then in January, there is additional data that comes
in. Yes, because in January, you know, so they have all of the data from their surveys they've collected in August, September, October, and November. That tells you something. And then what they do in December, for what they call the December Agricultural Survey, they take their biggest samples of the year. This is a monster survey, presumably except under extraordinary circumstances. All the corn and soybean is harvested. Farmers should have pretty darn good close idea of what their true yields are. And since they're taking a really big sample, statistics says that should have a pretty small error, and that's what they call the final estimate.
How often do they have an error? Do you know? Have you looked back? How often do they make an adjustment?
You mean in the final?
Yeah, so they will go back and adjust the final numbers
a year later sometimes. In theory, it's important to remember, in theory, they are making an error 100% of the time. In theory, they make an error 100% of the time. I'm sure that my friends in NASS would love to hear that broadcast over the airwaves. But from a purely scientific statistical standpoint, they know that's true, and they publish these statistics. Because even in December, when they're surveying, I have off the top of my head, 80, 90,000 farmers, it's still a sample of all farmers that produce corn, soybeans, wheat, or any other crop. And since you're taking a sample, even though it's a big one, it's not what we call a census. You're not measuring the entire population, every single farmer who produces corn and soybeans, and in theory, then you would have zero error. They have sampling error in every one of those final estimates, and they actually published in January and other reports, they tell you how big that is.
What the error rate is.
And that's another theme of Daryl and I's writings, is that people simply don't appreciate how big that underlying sampling error rate is. That's the only way to eliminate it is to spend an exorbitant amount of money and get make your sample sizes even larger than what they already take. It would obviously get uneconomic very fast. So in that sense, what we call in the trade those January quote unquote final estimates are, you know, people just call them the final actuals. Those are estimates that have an error rate. And so we never truly, truly, truly know the truth about the size of the crop or yields because we're taking samples. Now, we do every 5 years an agricultural census that in theory counts every bushel of corn or soybeans, every acre, you know, in that year. And that gives us some benchmarks that we can go back and say, well, we could have been off a little bit here, a little bit there. And NAS does every 5 years go back and revise the previous 5 year of the January estimates if the census shows data that's inconsistent with what they originally estimated.
I think so. Much for delving deep into this. It's fascinating to me.
And hopefully I haven't put anyone too much to sleep.
They can learn about it too on the Farm Doc Daily website if they want. They can at least go back and look at the first part of our discussion.
Yeah,
it's there.
I tell people I'm one of a very small handful of people who are truly obsessed with USDA crop reports.
Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
And of course, Scott Irwin, he is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. If you'd like to read the article that he and Daryl Good authored for the FarmDoc website, you can find that at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. You're going to need to look for Big Corn and Soybean Crops Getting Bigger is a Myth. That's the title. It was produced on September the 28th, 2016. You can find that right there at the Farm Doc Daily website and read it for yourself. You can also look Scott up on Twitter if you want and follow his Twitter account. Follow mine as well. At Commodity Week for me, and Scott is at Scott Irwin UI. So that's at Scott Irwin UI on Twitter. You can follow what he has to say. You've been listening, of course, to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.